Hi, thank you for waiting. You're on the air. Hello?
Hi, I just wanted to thank Mr. Woolsey, Nancy, Mary, and Scott for giving their time tonight. I have a question. It's a very new question. Sitka Water Bottling, Forrester shut down. I don't believe necessarily Forrester. I don't think they followed through. I would ask their opinion as to should it have gone as far as it's gone with the water bottling company, or should it have cost it? What's your belief? Should it have cost Sitka as much as it has to keep them open, and now they're shut down anyways? Should it have been shut down some time ago? And then also I'd like to say, Nancy, you're doing a great job.
All right. Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Nancy, do you want to take this question?
Sure. Of course, we on the assembly, we knew that this was coming. There was probably extraordinary efforts by the Sawmill Cove board to keep TAB open. As an assembly, if it had been brought to us sooner, it probably would have been shut down. You know, it's a hard decision to make, but it really was the Cove, the Sawmill Cove board, that really worked to try and keep this business thriving. Their contract is a unique contract, and we've learned some lessons from the contract that was signed with them. So that complicated the dealings and being able to shut this down sooner. I still believe that we have potential to sell water out there. I think if the timing isn't right, that's okay. We're spilling water off Blue Lake right now, and that's just excess water that it's money down the drain. We can afford to sell it pretty cheaply when it's spilling over like this. But we need a better way to get it to a tanker. And, you know, one of the strong reasons why we need to build a multi-purpose dock out there, it may not be imminent for the present, but it will be imminent need in the very near future, I think.
All right. Thanks, Nancy. What do you think, Mary, about the TAB situation, True Alaska Bottling?
Well, I have to agree with Nancy that I think the Cove Board had a lot to do with the prolonging of TAB being out there. And that being said, I think there's a couple of times in recent memory where they've kind of put the assembly between a rock and a hard place because of dealings. But, you know, again, no second guessing. It's already done. But I think we do, as a city, need to do something out there. We need to either sell off the property or tighten up the management some so that a company cannot get in a position where it owes the city thousands and thousands of dollars for anything. You know, I know that Silver Bay isn't necessarily very popular, but they have pumped millions of dollars into this community and allowed a lot more fish to be processed that couldn't have been processed any other way. And, you know, that's the kind of business that we need out there. They don't necessarily have to arrive the way Silver Bay did, but we need businesses that can pay their bills.
All right. Thanks, Mary. Scott McAdams?
Sure. Well, I appreciate the question. You know, I certainly and would echo Mary's comments. I'm not going to second guess or fault prior assemblies. You know, I think that TAB may have been a model and an enterprise whose idea came before its time. You know, and it's an interesting thing. There's some real limitations and some real challenges about getting into the bottled water business. And you know, if you don't have PepsiCo or Coca-Cola behind you, it's a difficult enterprise to be successful in. But nevertheless, we live on a planet with finite water resources. I suspect, you know, a future assembly in the 2020s will probably be shipping water out of that site, maybe in bulk containers, maybe back to bottling. But again, I think this was a best effort. I can't fault prior assemblies for looking at, you know, the sort of economic enterprise zoning and the way that they've governed Sawmill Creek, particularly on this issue. So maybe an idea that just came before the timing was right.
Okay. Thank you, Scott. We've got another caller. Thank you for waiting. You have a question?
Yes, sir. I called last night. I hope I'm not calling. This question hasn't been spoken to. I was kind of just dismayed that last year when 22 nonprofits came to the assembly and asked for help for all the people in our community, our family, as it were, and the assembly gave less than $100,000 to children and older people and the different groups that have worked so hard in this town. And I'm wondering what the three people that want to be mayor are going to do to, or if they are going to do anything about that. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you for your call. Mary, you want to take this one? And also, you did ask what as mayor you would do if you wanted to think about maybe this question in the context of chairing the assembly, how you would approach the problem, well, as he sees it anyway.
Yes, I don't think that being the chair makes any difference, really. I think being the chair's, the duties are to basically run the meetings and to be the person that takes the blows to the head when people don't like the assembly's actions. Be out there in the front of the public, and they're the ones that people can kind of come after, and that has certainly happened this year. We can't have everything. It would be nice if we can trim the budget certain places and have more nonprofit funding available. I do agree with, I've had quite a few people talk to me about it, and they think that perhaps the nonprofits could more strenuously pursue grants outside the city funding stream. And frankly, we're not Seattle. We're not going to be able to have every single social program that people would like to have. I think we need to get our priorities in, and the things that serve the most people, we need to try to fund to the highest level possible on the municipal level. But again, it comes down to whether it's a wish or a need, and we do have to make the tough decisions, and we can certainly support with resolutions, grants, and help try to put up matching where it's absolutely necessary. But the two grants that were asked for in the last assembly meeting, both of them could have been applied for without any matching money at all from the city. It's just that your request is rated a little bit higher. So I do think that our nonprofits and perhaps the city can help in the grant writing process. I don't know if we have any employees that have that kind of skill, but if we did, we could certainly assist in that way.
Yeah, I have heard the same thing, and just in observing the process, that a lot of what's being asked for is leveraging grants. For I know that, like, the city of Anchorage gives more money to the Sitka Summer Music Festival than Sitka mm-hmm. does. Nancy, why don't you take it? What about the caller's question, the 1% to nonprofits? How do you balance these requests versus the budget?
You know, it's changed over the years. When it seems that when we first moved to Sitka that the city monies went mostly for the Caller mentioned women and children's programs, and really it did seem like that was really where most of the money went, was to supporting, Little League and, sports programs and the Safe Shelter and... And with the growth of nonprofits, it was an astounding number, a huge increase in the number of agencies that were requesting money in the last 2 years. And so we may need to relook at that and see what our priorities are really in funding, and where it needs to go, because, I can't help but be a woman and child advocate, and a health advocate. That is who I am. But I would also have to include in that the elders, and supporting our elders, I think, is really important. The Safe Shelter is paramount to this community, and if all the things that we do in Sitka, that is one thing that I believe the city has a responsibility to help support and strongly support. These are our citizens who are hurting, and the Safe Shelter cannot do it alone. I think there might be some priority weighting of the different agencies that come before us, but there's so many things that, the Historical Society, wouldn't it be wonderful if we really did have a building for our Historical Society? That is a huge, interest that all of us as Sitkins have. The final line is that we're balancing, all the things that we want and all the things that we need with how much money we have to spend. I wish we had more.
Do you think the prioritizing should happen at the assembly table, or in the Health Needs Commission?
Well, I loved it the year that the Health Needs Commission did it. They asked not to do it this time.
Yeah.
It may be direction. I don't know that the Assembly needs to actually deliberate on it. I think giving direction to a group with some guidelines is an appropriate way to go.
Okay. Thank you, Nancy. Scott, what do you think about nonprofit funding in the municipal budget?
Well, I appreciate the question, and I think that the nature of the question, as I understand it, is that really what we don't do as a municipality, we outsource to our nonprofits. I want to be clear here that Sitkins are receiving a tremendous service from our nonprofit community and from our public service sector overall. At quite affordable rates. Again, you know, we talk about Anchorage supporting the Sitka Fine Arts Festival. I'm sorry, the Sitka Summer Music Festival at a higher rate than our local borough does. Well, of course, the city of Anchorage has 300,000 people and has 38 departments in their city government. I believe we have 11. But again, you know, I think that the arts are fundamental economic infrastructure. There's data. The work I've done with the National Endowment for the Arts and the State Council on the Arts over the last few years. There's data out there that connects economic activity, community livability, and attracting outside commerce. There's a direct correlation to how well a community publicly funds its arts. Healthy communities are fundamental to community infrastructure, and I appreciate all the perspectives here at the table. But again, I think what happens, just as many of our communities patch services together, and we've had a very strong presence here in the form of search. We have a strong tradition of healthcare here that comes that's funded by state government, whether it be the Pioneer Home or other services. And so we've been able to patch work together what other communities actually have to pay for themselves. So I think that when we take a look at some of these things as actually being fundamental to the functioning of a healthy community and a community that people want to live in, that people want to invest capital in, that people want to build a future in, then I think that oftentimes we eat our seed corn. We are penny wise and pound foolish. We look at these things just for their dollar amount and don't really take a deep look at what can be delivered for what value these services bring to our community. And I can tell you the services are broad and felt deeply in this town.
Do you see any particular role for the mayor in maintaining this or expanding it decreasing it?
Sure. I think that, and this leads back into another part of the question, I think one of the key roles of the mayor is to develop, to really covet a strong relationship with the chairman on the city commissions and city committees. I think that I used to be a member of the Long Range Planning Economic Development Commission before I got on the school board. And I remember those days. We used to do the due diligence for the Stevens revolving economic development money. I tell you, those folks take the work seriously. They work hard. They put a lot of effort in to making sure that they put together a credible and sound product for the Assembly to consider. And so I think maybe the first role is to charge and delegate some of the due diligence down to the commission level.
All right. Thanks, Scott. Thank you for waiting. You're on the air with our candidates.
Oh, thank you. I'd like to thank Raven Radio and all the candidates who have taken the time to answer our questions. My question is this. As mayor, what do you think the role of the city attorney and the assembly is in the public initiative process? And the second part of this question is, should the city help or hinder citizens in their effort to affect change when their feelings about the public process has not met their expectations or outcome for what they feel is best for the people of Sitka?
Good question. Thank you for asking.
Thank you.
All right. Nancy Cavanaugh, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it is well defined what the attorney's role is, and the attorney can't write the initiative, but should be available to read the initiative and make suggestions and doesn't, even though it says, I think, that under the direction of the assembly will do that, but our attorney has been, I believe, doing that very thing, taking the initiatives and making comments about where things could are not quite legal and what might, what they might do to, I mean, they can't, our attorney can't write it for them, but making notations about what needs to be changed in order for it to come back to for a reading. It's, you know, it's a difficult position that the attorney's in. The attorney works for the assembly, and it isn't the in big terms, I mean, it isn't the city's attorney. So in the initiative process, people come forward. It's a right of the people to do this, to gather information, to petition a change, and it takes a lot of work and it takes a lot of persistence, and getting it legally right is a difficult thing, especially in terms of our the way our statutes are written today. It's not an easy process to go through. It certainly an organization can hire an attorney themselves, and then if they win a petition and it's against something that the city's done, can sue to get back the damages that, you know, they had to put out. I hope really what, you know, the best answer is that everybody's communicating together. And, the, you know, really the best answer is that we don't get into adversarial roles.
Mm-hmm.
That we, you know, it's certainly there. It's you know, and it's, and I welcome the process. It's the right thing to do. But better than ending up in adversarial positions is to have people being able to sit down and talk about what the issues are and trying to work them out together. And I hope that people feel that on this, as whatever happens in the election coming up, that that as they approach the assembly, that they will be feel like they are respected when they come forward, that they are listened to, and that there's an opportunity to dialogue and to find some common ground if there can be. We are a very politically active community, and it's very diverse, and it's not unexpected that that two or three or four or five groups of people will have very strong opinions that differ, you know, significantly from each other. That doesn't mean that we can't learn to be respectful, that we can't listen, that we can't find common ground. We won't always find consensus, but I think it's a goal that we should be looking at.
All right. Thanks, Nancy. Mary, there's two parts to the question. The first is, what's the role of the municipal attorney? And part two is, how should the assembly, I think the caller's words were, assist the public in affecting change. I probably botched it. I'm sorry. But,
well, I think so, I can probably okay. answer her question. I probably couldn't disagree more. I think with Nancy's position here, I think it should be as easy as possible for voters to make things happen. I think our attorney, and I've been personally involved with several initiatives that have been kicked back on the grounds that appropriations had already been made. Appropriations had not been made. There were no leases. However, we as a group thought it would be counterproductive to go out and hire an attorney and spend a lot of money. The entire initiative process is in place, as it says in our charter and in our general code, so that the citizens can bring forth their own ideas, whether the assembly thinks it's a good idea or not. And I think it's not the city attorney's role to pick apart something and make a decision based on her personal opinion, particularly when they line up with a court case that's already been lost, when Sitkins for a Clear Vote had to sue, cost the city and the taxpayers a lot of money, and the judge ended up ruling in their favor. I think that precedent should have been a lesson, and I think that people are rightly so in being frustrated. If you collect 700 signatures in 4 days, I believe that the assembly should listen to what they have said and bring it forward on their own as a possible ordinance or initiative. Because clearly the public has spoken when that happens. These people didn't go out and collect them. People came to them to sign them, me being one of them. And I think when that many people, you know, that's how many people voted in the last election. That's a full third or so. And that should have been listened to. And it's not the issue of large land sales at the Cove. It's not going to reverse anything that's already happened. It wasn't an issue that was so timely it had to have a special election. And I believe it is something that people feel very, very strongly about and should be on the ballot. And I understand their frustration, and I think the mayor's role is to listen to the people, particularly large numbers.
What if the municipal attorney thinks the ballot initiative is illegal?
Then if we're talking about this many people, I don't think it's the role of the group to have to hire an attorney. I think we certainly call in outside counsel at the drop of a hat here. I think that could have been brought into it, and there should have been some way. And certainly the assembly themselves could have done this without any problem whatsoever, just the same as they could have listened to the Sawmill Cove Board's request a few months ago that said, hey, we don't need a vote on the dock if the city owns it and the city builds it and the city runs it. And, you know, all we need is $9 million and we'll build a dock out here and we don't have to ask the voters. We can just do it as the assembly. The assembly also has the same purview to put forth the initiative that the people would like to see, and certainly take a public process in a large project like this that's going to have far-reaching outcome for years and years and years.
Thanks, Mary. Scott McAdams.
Well, first of all, I mean, just to cut right to what I think the issue that has brought this issue forward, let me begin by saying that my first goal as mayor, should I be elected, is to not have a single ballot initiative crafted during my tenure. And here's how I hope to achieve that. And that is by, whenever possible, in every way possible, having an open, transparent, fair public process on the front end of our most divisive issues. I think it's been interesting being a candidate. You know, one of the functions, one of the things I believe in being a good governance leader is not grandstanding and beating the majority over the head with their decisions. So I want to be sensitive in the way that I frame this. But I do have to say that I've called on the telephone over 300 voters in this community since I've been a candidate. And I have to say, without any qualification, that the leading concern that folks have had in this most recent cycle of city governance is the Silver Bay Seafood Dock deal. People are confused by it. People are upset and outraged over it. And we're talking about not just the likely suspects. We're talking about the young and the old, the super voter and the occasional voter. I'm hearing this. So that's enough about that particular issue. But what I will say is that as it relates back to the city attorney, you know, I think that in the first order of business, if the city attorney feels conflicted between the citizen on the street and the direction of their assembly, ultimately the answer to the assembly, and you can see where there would be a natural conflict there. But nevertheless, I think that you know, when things come forward and there is a potential conflict, we can, as assembly members, encourage people to come forward and bring their issues to us, bring the issues that arise during a public process, champion that, direct the city attorney to craft ordinance if we feel it's something that rises to the specter of being a public vote.
Okay. Thank you, Scott. We have another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Mitch. Hey, I asked all the assembly members to pick one thing that best makes them, one thing off their running platform that best makes them the best choice for mayor. Please explain. I'm asking them only to explain one thing that they think makes them best choice for the mayor.
Okay, thanks
not several things, just one.
All right, thanks for your call. All right, That's sort of a good question here in the last 8 minutes of our forum. What makes you a good choice for mayor, Mary Magnuson?
Well, it's kind of a hard question to just pick one thing. If I was going to pick just one, I'd have to say fiscal conservancy. I am definitely a fiscal conservative. I think we need to put the brakes on some of the spending that's been going on. I think it's important that we don't raise taxes, particularly not now. We don't know what's going to happen with our economy. I'm not a doom and gloomer, but I do believe that we may take a serious hit in our tourist industry. We have a lot of eggs in the tourist basket. We rely a lot on that money. And being fiscally conservative at this time, not penny wise and pound foolish, because some things are very important. I think we need to advance our hydro. I think that's fiscally responsible, because then we can move away from oil in our buildings. So I'd have to say my one thing is I do not want to grow the government in the form of taxation on anybody.
All right. Thanks, Mary. Scott, what makes you a good pick for mayor?
I think the number one thing that the reason why I would vote for me is comes down to experience. I think that, people have a few good choices here, and sometimes just as if you were interviewing for a position, you might be lucky enough to have a couple of good candidates for the job. Ultimately, I think that my years, not only as a governance leader and a public chairman in the school board, but also as a statewide president of the Alaska School Board Association, I've had to learn how to carry out the business of a body that represents 180,000 school children. And that's a huge responsibility, particularly when you take that message beyond the boundaries of this state. So I think that I have a sense of propriety, a sense of even-handedness that has all come from experience.
All right. Thanks, Scott. Nancy, what makes you a good pick for mayor?
Well, I have to go with experience also. And I think that there's nothing that prepares you better for being mayor than being on the assembly. I've been a member of the hospital commission, the hospitals board. I'm certainly the liaison to the hospital board now. So I've been on boards before. There's nothing that puts you in the spotlight like the assembly does, and really getting an appreciation for the multitasking, the diversity of opinions, the difficulty of the decisions that you make, and sometimes having to make those decisions really with just the information that you have in front of you. It's been a huge learning curve over the last 2 years, and one that I've found very, very valuable. I don't know how I could run for mayor without having had these past 2 years of experience. And what I bring to the table really is that record of my experience, and for good or bad, it's been out there. I sleep good at night with the decisions that I've made. There have been some very difficult ones, but I know I can speak for everybody here. We all, and everyone that serves in the assembly puts the city of Sitka first in their own way, in their own interpretation. They want to see the best city of Sitka. They all want to live here, and so knowing that really helps me to be able to live with decisions that are made, even when things don't go my way. I know that everybody sitting at the table wants to see the best community that they can.